You're listening to the Best of the Morning Show podcast. Today's best segments from all 3 hours rolled into one.
I don't care.
As we come back and kind of set the scene, where is your attention at? All on tonight or on the week as a whole? Like when you're wanting to preview these games, are you thinking just Thursday, first night? Or are you thinking just like, hey, all eight of these are bangers, but let's get to them now? I know you guys got to do a show tomorrow, so you probably want to talk about Friday on Friday. That's why I'm wondering. Like, because my attention is like still, when you tell me, hey, the games start tonight, I'm like, okay, good. Get me a Tennessee on Friday. I've barely given these too much focus. They're all on the other side of the bracket. Tennessee, Creighton, to me, is still obviously the big story and kind of just has all of my focus. It's such a big game. It's such a fun game. Like tonight, though, I mean, like you guys keep talking about this Illinois-Iowa State game. The nation's number one defense against the nation's number one defense. Offense versus defense. Yeah, the top going head-to-head. That's clear-cut the best game tonight, right?
I would think so.
I think so.
I just don't know if I care about those teams. I'm a storyline guy. I've talked about this. I need storylines on my sports to really get me to care. I can admire good games like that. I can appreciate them. I just don't get excited for them. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I can put them on and be like, oh, this is fun. But like, to me, like the whole lead up to that, I haven't. You guys keep talking about it. I'm like, ah, man, I want to be excited for Illinois-Iowa State, but, like, I don't really care about any of those players. I don't really care about any of those coaches. Sell me on it, Bob.
I actually think, well, when we went into the bracket in the East, we talked about Auburn being the one team that could probably unseat UConn. Well, Auburn obviously is gone. UConn's a wagon. They just keep rolling. For some reason, I think Illinois, out of these two teams, Illinois is the one that could give UConn a game on Saturday. I just think they're offensively dialed in right now. Ever since they started playing, booty ball?
Booty ball.
Excuse me?
Yep, you heard me.
Booty ball?
Booty ball.
Yes. Shout out.
This guy's name, I assume?
No.
This is a Jay Wright concept.
Yeah, shout out Jay Wright.
Me through booty ball.
Get a larger man into the post that plays guard and basically just put your booty into a smaller guard and back him down. And, you know, you kind of just work out of the post. Either you have a bigger guy on a smaller guy in the post and can kind of work some post moves, or you got kind of kick out options.
Yeah, I mean, Villanova did thrive with that.
Mm-hmm.
I remember they whipped our ass a couple years ago doing that early in the season. We had no answer for booty ball. Okay, so it is just put your booty on someone and post them up. But guards.
Damask, yeah. Damask is the big guy who's running booty ball here, kind of. And he's been playing great recently. Obviously, first round had the triple-double, and then in their second round game had 22-7-3.
Okay. That's a... A little bit of a sales point. And I will say, looking at this, I'm like 10 tonight. Oh, man, I hope I'm
It's brutal.
I hope I'm asleep by that. Like, you guys have been waiting for this game. You guys are going to be struggling tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, probably.
Yeah, because this isn't going to end until like 12:30.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's just like last week, right? We went through this last week on Friday morning.
Well, yeah, but you didn't make it to the end on Thursday, did you? You didn't make it to the end of Thursday night late game?
Oh no, not that.
Well, that was Sunday, I guess.
But the Tennessee game was late. It was late enough. I mean, yeah, I can stay up a little longer for this one. So Illinois's got interesting plot lines in terms of booty ball and Terrence Shannon. I mean, they're good. They can score. I got to tell you about Iowa State. I don't know. I still don't know a lot about them. I mean, I think they're very good, and I've watched them, but they obviously have some guys who are star players, but they don't have anybody that's that memorable to me. But they're a hell of a team. Number one nationally in terms of defense right now. So I don't know. It should, you know, worlds collide tonight, right? Top team in offensive efficiency, top team in defensive efficiency. I don't even know what's the total on that game.
Let's see. I got it here. 146.5.
That even, I don't know. I was going to say that feels a little high, but maybe not. I mean, again, Illinois has been on a heater recently. They're scoring a lot.
Well, would you rather have the number one offense or the number one defense? Because, you know, like in football, you'd probably lean on defense, maybe.
Yeah, I agree. I would say just by firsthand experience with our guys who've always had a great defense, it hasn't worked out that well sometimes in the tournament. You know, I think, I mean, still got to score the ball. So I'd say offense myself.
Sam, would you rather have the number one offense or the number one defense?
I think I'm going to say the number one offense right now. This Illinois team just really feels unstoppable on offense right now. And I just think so many times in March when you get hot, just that momentum can ride you sometimes further than good defense can a few times.
See, I disagree. I think I'd rather have the defense. And, like, there's just two games that stand out where I feel like the offense versus defense was, you know, near the top of the country going against each other. And, like, I think back to Gonzaga-Baylor, where Baylor just absolutely punked Gonzaga's offense and just, you know, ran him out of the gym. And then also, like, last year, San Diego State-Alabama, where that was another game where a team was just more physical and shut down that offense and you know, brought the game to a screeching halt. I don't know if those two are enough to mean anything. I haven't been able to find on Google a list of times where the number one offense and number one defense have played. And
I just saw a tweet actually yesterday about this.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Should have checked X.
For the 10th time since 2012, number one KenPom offense will play the number one KenPom defense.
Okay.
And it's pretty much split. Oh, yeah, it's number one offense is 4-5 versus the number one defense.
Yes! Let's go!
So it's about 50-50. Last one was Arizona-Tennessee, actually.
Arizona-Tennessee from last year?
2022, yeah.
Or I guess 2 years ago at this point, yeah. Mm-hmm. The one in Knoxville that we won, right? That'd be that one, right? I believe so.
So this hasn't happened in the tournament.
I think that is the one in Arizona, no?
No, that would have been 21. That was when Fulkerson was still here, right? Is Fulkerson still here in 22?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was. So this wasn't...
Did we play Arizona last year?
No.
We played Texas last year.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm confused now. These years...
I literally went to that game. I should know this.
You went to one in Arizona?
Yeah.
But
you're just confusing me, John.
These matchups, these nine matchups since 2012 have not been exclusively in the tournament. No.
That was a regular season game.
I gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, it was at Arizona.
In 2022?
Mm-hmm.
So that had been when Arizona won, the offense won.
Yeah.
Thanks to all those damn foul calls they got.
I think there's some truth to say, and it applies to Alabama. It definitely applies to Illinois, too. It's like, yeah, the offense does matter. You got to play enough defense, though, because Illinois is not far off Alabama's pace in terms of defensive efficiency. They're 91st. So if the whole notion is you just go to outscore people, shots better be falling, man.
I'm really backwards. I thought we played Arizona at Arizona first, then got the rematch in Knoxville. It was not that way. We played Arizona in Knoxville first and then went to Arizona.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I barely even remember Arizona coming to Knoxville.
Really?
We ran them out, right?
No, we won a close one. Like, and Fulkerson shot a bunch of free throws, and they were really mad.
I guess we got off to a big start against them in that game.
Yeah, we did. I would have bet so much money that we played at Arizona first, and then they came here and we got revenge. There needs to be – I mean, I know there will be, but I can't wait to see these studies about the long-term effects of COVID on the brain and just the COVID era, not even the disease, just the COVID era. Cause
it's going to be 2035, and I'm going to be stuck in, like, 2021.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to have such a good memory and being able to, like, remember, like – orders of things and being able to think about, oh, I was here, I watched this game. And I would have bet so much money that we played Arizona at Arizona first, which is not the case, which is why I had that year backwards, which is why I thought it was 2 years ago, because, man, okay, geez Louise. So that was a case that the number one offense beat the number one defense.
Okay. Defense had won the last three times, though.
Defense had won three prior?
Yeah, Gonzaga in Texas earlier in the year in 2022. And then in 2019, Gonzaga over Texas Tech and Michigan State over Kentucky.
Wait.
Kentucky over Michigan
Gonzaga
State.
Gonzaga over Texas Tech. That would have been offense over defense, wouldn't it have?
Oh, I'm sorry. The defense has won the past top three. There's no way that Kentucky was the top defense in 2019. That can't be true.
I don't know. There's no way that Gonzaga was the top defense over Texas Tech, in my opinion, or Texas Tech was the top offense. I mean,
Texas Tech was the top defense in 2019.
And they beat Gonzaga? They lost to Gonzaga. Now you've got me confused because you said
no, they beat Gonzaga.
Texas Tech beat Gonzaga? Okay. Okay. So anyways, we got number one offense versus number one defense tonight. I give the slight edge to the defense. But like Bob said, Iowa State, I don't know much about them other than like, hey, they blew out Houston and they would always play tough at home. And they had that crazy game against Baylor where somebody hit a game winner after the buzzer and kind of changed the way you came out of that game thinking about the team. If it would have just been a half a second earlier or a tenth of a second earlier, we'd have a different winner and have a different narrative. But it is a class of styles. And ultimately, if you're rooting against UConn, you then become a fan of whoever wins this game. Because it'll be the first time, like the Elite Eight will be the first time where you actually think UConn can get knocked off. They haven't really had to sweat their first two rounds. They might be in for a little bit of a struggle tonight against San Diego State, but I doubt it. Unless San Diego State just really studies the game film from last year's national championship and decides like, hey, we got to do a lot of things differently and here's how you beat Danny Hurley. I don't know, but otherwise feels like they're going to get blown out again tonight. But the Elite Eight, if you're rooting for UConn to lose, maybe whoever wins this game tonight can take them out.
I think it's simple enough for UConn if they can just bottle up Jaden Ledee. I don't know what San Diego State has besides him. I mean, I know they have some other players, but he carries the water for them offensively because they don't score that much. They game planned the hell out of Alabama last season. San Diego State did. I just don't know if UConn. I don't think UConn's susceptible to that.
Well, no, UConn, unlike Alabama, if they're not getting it done offensively, they still guard.
Right.
They still guard and make your life really tough there, which is why they're so good. They're elite at both sides of the court.
Yeah, number two offensive efficiency, number eight defensive efficiency. That's a hell of a blend right there.
I will say it didn't help Auburn. That was top 10 in both. So maybe it'll curse UConn too. Maybe UConn eventually will run out of luck and their players will finally grow tired of hearing Danny Hurley complain about everything. This guy's mad he's having to play at 7:30. Give it a rest. Like, who cares?
I love watching him, though, man. I'm just fascinated by his intensity. It's like so much.
I watched a video of him yesterday. They were just in shoot around, and he was just messing around, like hitting a couple free throws or something. And the student manager was tossing balls back to him, and he drives on him. And the kid like contested a little bit, and he makes it, and he just hit like the too small on this manager. And the kid was like, like very small.
Yeah, what's that kid going to do?
Yeah.
Complain?
Oh, that's funny.
All right, boss.
Yeah, Danny Hurley will kick his ass. So Danny Hurley is walking around looking for a fight, which is what usually I think of San Diego State's basketball program, is that they are walking around looking for a fight. We said the number one game tonight was Illinois-Iowa State. Bob, what you got for number two?
I'd say the one I'm most interested in, it's probably because of the SEC tie, not that I'm rooting for them. I'm not that guy that does the whole I'm just rooting for my SEC brethren. But I think that Alabama-North Carolina game could be interesting. I think it could go either way. I think it's I don't think it's in between. I think it's either a close game or I think North Carolina runs them off the court. Again, it's all going to depend on Alabama's ability to hit shots because we know Carolina's going to score.
Sam, what do you make of Alabama, North Carolina? Because I do agree. I do think that's probably the second best game. Sadly enough, though, they both play late and they both play at the same time.
Yeah. I think that's definitely the second most entertaining game tonight, and I think it's interesting because I think it's two teams that can really kind of catch fire or can also get really cold, too. I think the North Carolina team obviously has a little bit more well-rounded ways to score other than just hitting the three-point ball. But, you know, I think if you get two teams, both of these teams that are having a hot shooting night, I think this could be some fireworks and be a really, really fun game.
Bob, I know you talked about how they're SEC brethren, but that you don't care or root for them. Do you think that this could be a statement for both of these conferences? Do you view it that way? Because the ACC, much maligned this year, although they get to the tournament and they've performed pretty well. They've been the best team in the tournament. The SEC had the case for being the best conference, or at least the second best conference behind the Big 12, depending on where you side on the way the Big 12 was scheduling in the offseason and juking the stats when it came to all the KenPom ratings because they were just beating up on all these bad teams in the non-conference and playing, you know, 200 to 300th ranked non-conference schedules. The SEC's pride does seem to be a little bit on the line here in terms of conference prestige against the ACC, I do feel like.
Yeah, I think that's right. When you put it that way, there's part of me that wants to, you know, hopefully Tennessee wins tomorrow night, and if Alabama loses, Tennessee at a minimum is the last SEC team standing. But there may be a little bit about that conference pride. I'm sure the ACC, those teams, they're loving the fact that I was saying it. I know a lot of people were that the ACC is down, and, you know, they're not. Do they even deserve to have three teams in the NCAA tournament, let alone four? Well, they're all still playing, so, I mean, they're getting the last laugh. I don't know if tonight, if Alabama pulls an upset, if that settles that score, I don't know. But I would also say there's the other wrinkle here is Nate Oates, who obviously I think Nate Oates is a good coach. I don't, you know, the whole beautiful mind thing got a little overblown, honestly, but I think he's a good coach. This is his third Sweet 16 in four seasons. He's been with the team, I think, five, but they had that COVID year. He hasn't gotten past the Sweet 16. And so the question becomes, when does that happen? If you're an Alabama fan, you've got this great run each year to the Sweet 16, and maybe for them that's enough. I would like to believe, as a basketball fan, you would want more than that. And question is, you know, tonight's a big game for him. Can he get over that hump, get him to an Elite Eight with a shot at a Final Four?
Yeah, when you tell me it's Nate Oates and you lay all that out, then I'm definitely rooting for North Carolina. I do think that basketball is different than football. I do think conference pride matters in basketball a lot more just because your conference perception matters so much more. Your prestige matters when it comes to seeding and actually giving you a better chance to go far in a tournament. Like Tennessee was a 2-seed with a chance to be a 1-seed because they did so well in the tough SEC. It behooves you to have your rivals actually be good, especially in the non-conference. But like in football, like for as much as we've hated the SEC's run, you do get some residual benefits from that too, right? With the SEC becoming the best conference in football, like it makes your prestige rise. It makes your conference seem like the place to be. I would imagine that you got, you know, a good amount of recruits that looked at you versus Clemson or Florida State or North Carolina and said, yeah, those are nice schools, but I don't want to play in the ACC. I want to play in the SEC. I want to play in the mega conference, the power conference, the NFL's minor league. I know we weren't winning any national championships and all of our rivals were, but so maybe it was actually just a huge net loss, even though you are getting better better teams and could win your bowl game whenever you went up against those teams or win your non-conference games. I don't know. Maybe you'll still be better off being North Carolina basketball this year and not having to go through the ringer. Not having to have every game feel like a war. Or really just if you're North Carolina basketball, just having to win one game a year, two games a year against Duke and coast to a conference title otherwise. I don't know. But I do think, like, if Tennessee and Alabama can both make the Elite Eight, especially if you look at North Carolina and Duke, if they lose, I do think that matters in the overarching college basketball conversation.
Yeah, you frame it that way, I would tend to agree. I think another intangible on this for North Carolina is the way Armando Bacot's been playing. Obviously, we know he's a good player, but he kind of, not too long ago in their offense, was less of a priority. It seemed to be all about R.J. Davis and Harrison Ingram, and obviously they are still big players and contributors. But since they got to the ACC Conference Tournament, between that and the NCAAs, these last five games, Bacot's been 14-10, 19-11, 18-12, 20-15, 18-7. I'm just curious who Alabama is going to put on him, who's going to seal him off, because he's a vacuum anyway. I mean, he gets so many rebounds, but it feels like he has upped his game. He understands the gravity of things. He's been there before. This is his last ride. I think that's going to be, you know, the Sears-R.J. Davis matchup is almost a wash to me. But the game in the post or in the paint is where I think North Carolina could make a big difference here.
Yeah, it feels like Alabama's going to have to shoot just crazy from three to win this game. They're just going to have to go crazy from three. And I haven't seen them go crazy from three in a long time. Like, they haven't done it so far in the tournaments. Maybe game one, you know, they blew out their opponent game one. Was it Charleston? Maybe they shot crazy from there. But, like, they didn't against Grand Canyon. They didn't in the SEC tournament. They didn't down the stretch against Tennessee and Arkansas or Florida when they were getting blown out. Or, you know, having to come from behind against Arkansas. So I don't know if Alabama still has that in them. Kind of same way we talk about Tennessee's offense. I don't know if they have that in them anymore. And, like, yeah, if you tell me Grant Nelson's going to be the one guarding Bacot, that doesn't seem to be a recipe for success for them. Although they've unlocked that freshman, right? Alabama has that freshman big man that's came in down the stretch. I don't know how to say his last name.
Is that Diabate?
Yeah. And he's played better for them, so maybe he's the answer. He's kind of helped make their defense at least not the worst.
Yeah.
So maybe he has some type of answer for Bacot. I don't know. I know I was talking about the conference pride and basketball and all that, but with that being said, like, make it clear I am rooting for Alabama to lose. Like, I want Nate Oates to fall on his face.
That kid's still only 6'7", Diabate.
Okay. He plays bigger.
Yeah.
Maybe that's because he's next to Sears. Maybe he does look like a big man compared to him.
I would guess it's Nick Pringle on Bacot.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll get in and get some reps, but I don't feel good about his chances either.
No.
So, yeah, maybe that's the key. Maybe for Alabama, maybe you try to sucker him into that, though. Maybe for Alabama, like, having – we talked about, you know, the number one offense versus the number one defense. Maybe this could also be a little bit of a throwback of, like, post play versus just trying to bomb threes.
Right.
Try and bait him into the post and just hope you have a hot night from three.
Yeah. Like, hey, yeah, here you got a mismatch. And I think even like the best post players are still going to probably like max out at like 60% from two. Just because, you know, it's physicality and it's hard to hit shots if you're not getting foul calls. And, you know, like, so maybe like, hey, yeah, we'll give you 60% of your twos if we can come down and try to hit 40% of our threes. So, yeah, maybe a matchup. If Nate Oates is actually smart, maybe that's what he tries to do. Just shut down three-point shooters and, yeah, Bacot, go ahead. You can have 20 and 20 if you want, but hopefully we have an on night from three. That's a fun game. That line's been fluctuating between 3.5 and 4.5 when North Carolina's favored.
I want to take North Carolina so bad, but, like, I think it's 88% of the public or something like that is on North Carolina. Crazy number.
That is a wild number. 88% is on, like, the spread?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, typically the public likes riding with the favorites and just like, oh, yeah, we saw them win by 30. Let's take North Carolina. Some, you know, the public doesn't lose every time, though, Sam.
Right, I know.
Yeah, so, I mean.
88%.
I know you get nervous about, hey, yeah, this is lopsided. Pros versus Joes. The Sharps might be on Carolina, too. Who knows? Because, like, Alabama's already kind of defying recent history by even being to the second weekend. When you play defense as bad as they do, typically you go out in the first weekend. But that's the thing about these one-game tournaments is, like, if it was a seven-game series, Carolina would impose their will. But one game, they shoot well from three. If Baycott gets in foul trouble, they could get to the Elite Eight. But I hope not. I don't feel good rooting for North Carolina, but I hate Alabama basketball. Maybe more than I hate Alabama football.
Really?
Maybe. Just because Saban earned the respect.
Yeah.
Like, Saban beat it out.
No respect from Bama basketball.
Yeah, like, Saban beat it out of you. Like, you know, don't get me wrong. Like, I hated Alabama football up until, like, 2017 or 18, where I was like, fine, forget it, whatever. This is like banging your head against a brick wall hoping you knock it down. Eventually, it just knocks you out. And that's kind of what Saban did to me, and you just earn that respect for them. Alabama basketball carries themselves like Alabama football, but they just don't actually win anything that matters.
That's fair.
Like in the postseason. I know they got the regular season titles and all that, but like they ain't got the same amount of success as Alabama football. So I actually hate the basketball program more. Is that a crazy statement, Bob?
No. We've talked. You know how I feel about Nate Oates. Again, good coach, but I do not like him. Douchiness level over-indexing there, man. He's
I really don't like Carolina basketball fans either, though.
I've got some level. I respect them. I mean, not their fans so much, but their program and their history. And I mean, they're, when I think we talk about blue bloods, I mean, they are top of the list for me, almost as much as Kentucky. I really, you know, in terms of their history and everything, And they seem to have weathered the storm. You know, they went through some different coaches post Dean Smith, and I think Hubert Davis, even though he hit a bump in the road last year, feels like he's got them locked in. I think he's going to be in that job for a while.
Yeah, with that being said, Bob, they were running a fake college for a while for their athletes.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that does affect my level of respect for them.
I guess.
They were running fake schools.
100%.
Fake classes.
Yeah.
Sam, send us to break. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio. Oh, we're getting close. What's the countdown at? Maybe 37 hours? Give or take some minutes. 37 hours, 37 and a half before Tennessee and Creighton tip off. It will be Tennessee's 10th ever Sweet 16 appearance. Lucky number 10. Nice,
yeah.
Round number.
I guess, you know, I've been here for most all of them, but I was kind of surprised when I was putting the notes together and saw it was the 10th one. It feels like it's been less, honestly, somehow. But, you know, once you start to realize that this is the third for Barnes and Bruce had three. And
so you think 10 seems too high of a number. See, when I saw 10th, I was like, man, that's surprising to me throughout the entire history of Tennessee basketball, which, you know, I'm not going to act like I'm an expert on. But, like, you hear of, like, oh, wow, Bernard King and Ernie Grunfeld, those guys were so good. And you start looking back at history, and you're like, oh, certainly they broke through a couple times there, because I'm the other way. Like, I'm like, yeah, three with Barnes, and I feel like Bruce was there, and I know Konzo was there. And I remember the game against North Carolina from, like, 2000 vaguely. You know, I was at a friend's sleepover. We watched it, and like, I wasn't really a college basketball fan at that point, or like a diehard or anything, and didn't really fully grasp the tournament, I don't think. But I remember that Sweet 16 and it being a big deal. So, like, there's what, seven of them when you had Konzo, like eight of them.
Yeah, I think it speaks to, honestly, and there's going to be probably some old school people who will read me the riot act, but I just don't think. I mean, there are a lot of contributors to this, but I just don't think Tennessee was that. It wasn't a successful basketball program in terms of deep runs in a tournament, you know. And again, part of it was selection. You know, they, for all we know, in some of the best Mears years, they might have missed out because they just didn't select as many teams.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that's what I really lose sight on when you're thinking about the history of Tennessee basketball is just the tournament expansion and how many teams were in the field and all that and how hard it was to actually make a Sweet 16.
Yeah.
Because, like, when did the tournament actually get expanded to, like, the way it is now with 64 teams?
It was, I want to say it was mid-80s, like, like 84, 85, somewhere in there, because Tennessee had a Sweet 16 run in 1981, and there were only 48 teams in it then.
Okay.
And that had been expanded from the late 70s, because at one point, so let's just talk about this. Tennessee, and when I was doing the kind of the historical check of Tennessee in the NCAA tournament, their first Sweet 16 that counts as a Sweet 16 was 1967, but you have to put an asterisk to that because there were only 23 teams invited, and there was a whole round of, like, I would call them, I guess, play-in games. Tennessee was in the Sweet 16, but they didn't win a game in that tournament. They were automatically advanced to the Field of 16. And then there were however many there were a handful of games. It was like 8 or 9 play-in games, so to speak, to fill out that Field of 16. So they drew a bye, and then they lost to Dayton. And then they actually played, like, some sort of third-place game after that to, and I don't even understand the structure because it's not like they were in the Final Four, but they played some sort of third place game for the region or whatever you would call it, and they lost that to Indiana. So that was a weird structure. I do remember when it was 32. I was super young, and again, I think that was in the mid to late 70s, and then it expanded to 48, and I want to say 64 expanded right around, again, somewhere in the 83, 84 range, somewhere in that era. So I think that's what contributes to, because we talk about with great admiration and praise for the Ray Mears era, and I get it, but I think that was part of the reason they never, you know, with Ernie and Bernie, you really didn't see anything that resembled a deep run in the tournament.
Sam, do you remember the Ohio State win to get to the Elite Eight?
Not really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a tense game. I remember that.
That was fun. I mean, I guess you have to say that was the biggest win in Tennessee basketball history, right? I mean, that's the one that broke you through your only Elite Eight, which is crazy. I mean, like, when you actually look at the Wikipedia for Tennessee basketball, it really puts into perspective just how great Rick Barnes has been here.
Yeah.
And how lucky Tennessee got. Whenever he, you know, he comes available right when you're firing Tindall and he takes the job. And, like, you know, Tennessee, not a lot of history prior to 2000, right, of even really winning tournament games. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So nine tournament wins, you know, just prior to 2000 or at 2000. When you look at appearances, I think you had 26 even appearances in your entire history, and only, I think, 11 of those came before 2000, 12 if you count 2000. Now, obviously, you know, Bruce Pearl, a big part of that as well, in terms of kind of establishing some type of tournament success or being a mainstay in the actual tournament and making the tournament. But, yeah, like, it is crazy just to look at the Wikipedia and see the lack of early success.
I think I was looking back during the Ernie and Bernie era, which would be around 76-77, they made the tournament each of those two seasons, but lost in the first round, lost to VMI in 76, lost to Syracuse in 77. And that, I believe, that Syracuse team was that was earlier in the 70s, when it was like 73-74 when they made the Final Four. So, yeah, it's definitely – things accelerated. Well, getting to the Sweet 16 in 2000, but then really it coincides with the arrival of Bruce.
So, like, is Friday night a top 10 game in Tennessee basketball history?
Yeah, top 10, yes, I think so.
And, yeah, I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean 10, but, like – regular season and postseason combined, like, it feels like one of the 10 most important games in Tennessee basketball history.
Yeah, this feels very different than a Sweet 16 matchup with, say, Florida Atlantic. I mean, they turned out to be a good team. They obviously won that game. This one, you know, you can use the term chalk, whatever. It's, you're playing to your seed. You're a number two, playing a number three. Two teams that are, Creighton's right around the top 10 if they're not in the top 10. They've got to be like 10 or 11. This is a huge game. Huge. And also, what's at stake for Creighton too? You know, they're in the same boat as Tennessee. Fell 1 point short of the Final Four last year, and that's the furthest they've ever gotten was Elite Eight.
Like, I think when you compare it just to FAU last year, like, Tennessee went in there as a bigger favorite, making the Elite Eight that year, riding off the Duke win. Like, it felt big and like a big wasted opportunity. But I don't think anybody thought last year's team was good enough to win it all. Now, maybe you could say, hey, we thought this team was good enough to get to the Final Four when you look at the draw, because the draw opened up for you and you would have had to beat, you know, a Kansas State team that wasn't anything special if you were able to beat FAU. So, like, the field opened up. But, like, I don't think anybody thought Tennessee was good enough to win it all. I do think if you actually look at this team, I do think they're good enough to win it all.
I agree with you on both points. I think the 22 team, to me, had a better shot at a deep run, in my opinion, than the 23 team would have. That's why that loss to Michigan hurt so bad.
Just skill-wise?
Yeah, I just think I think the way Vescovi was playing, the way Kennedy Chandler was playing, I just felt like they were kind of peaking at the right time is what it felt like to me leading up to the Michigan game where that all fell apart.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I just don't think I just don't think the region was set up for a lot of success there. Like, I don't know how we would have matched up with Villanova the next round.
That's true.
But I want to say that was the year they kind of kicked our ass that I was talking about, where they played booty ball against us and just really dominated us in the post with their guards. Like, I don't think we would have beaten Michigan then beaten Villanova. Maybe, though. You know, maybe we could have beaten them then turned around and beat Houston. I don't know. But, like, to me, like, it wasn't set up for as much success. We were mad about our seeding for a reason. We were kind of in that bracket you didn't want to be in, underseeded, I felt like. The team, though, to your point, though, Bob, was playing at a high level.
Yeah, won SEC tournament, and just they just felt dialed in to me. And I'm not going to lie, I was worried about Michigan in the second round, but I felt that was absolutely a winnable game.
Oh, yeah, definitely winnable and definitely one you should have won. I think they just came in hot.
They did.
If Tennessee – they were kind of the equivalent of whether – you know, if Tennessee would have came into this tournament after beating Alabama or South Carolina on a little bit of a win streak and kind of proving themselves. And, you know, if Tennessee – if the tournament started before the Kentucky and Mississippi State game, you'd have had a lot more people picking Tennessee to win it all. Instead, Tennessee had the two little, you know, hiccups or whatever you want to call them. Creighton is probably the second toughest Sweet 16 matchup that Rick Barnes has had. That Purdue team probably, with Carson Edwards, probably gets credit for being better than this Creighton team. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
I don't remember where they were at metrically or whatever.
But they're both three seeds, but, you know, you could argue Purdue was playing coming out of the Big Ten, although Creighton was out of the Big East now, but I do think this game is – there's just so many similarities, too. You know, Will Warren put it out there, too, about that
the tournament success of both programs.
The furthest they've gone, it's identical. You know, Elite Eight and who they lost to in the Elite Eight game, seed-wise, everything. It's like an absolute match.
Yeah, it was something crazy. Since, like, 85, we've made the same amount of tournaments. We've had the same deepest run. And then, yeah, both lost to a whatever seed. A five seed by however many points.
Yep.
By 1 point, I guess it would be.
Yeah.
And now we match up. Whenever you talk to me about Sweet 16 history, like, the word that comes to my mind is just pain. This is where my mind goes.
Yeah.
This has been the round that has just brought you so much pain. And, like, it feels like during Rick Barnes' era, every tournament loss has pretty much been its own story. Its own story of pain. The Oregon State game was just pain from, like, that team's roster setup and the, you know, the COVID, not letting your freshmen get acclimated properly and just not really having an identity and just being wildly inconsistent and the pain of starring Urosh in a tournament game. Last year, the pain was just a wasted opportunity.
That 21 Oregon State game, I know we've beat it up before, but that to me is the epitome of how one and done doesn't work for it didn't work for us, you know, and Keon was super talented, Jaden Springer talented, but it just never felt, all season long, it just never felt like it was cohesive.
Yeah, but I think maybe you could have had one of those freshman guards, but having both of them,
yeah,
with your next best player being whom? John Fulkerson? Like, no disrespect to him, but, like, not necessarily a versatile scorer. Not necessarily a complimentary piece with those guards. Yeah, that team just didn't fit. But, so, like, I mean, like, you know, then going back, of course, the Konzo block charge against Michigan. We don't need to talk about the Purdue game further. Like, the Sweet 16's just been pretty painful. Blowing leads to Ohio State. Getting blown out by Louisville. Hasn't been fun.
That's what I want to talk about, though, when we come back, is, like, what – I'd love to get your guys' thoughts. We can think about it over the break. Anybody who wants to call in and talk about it, too, please do. What's been Tennessee's, out of all these, as far as you can remember, we're probably going to predate Sam's existence on some of this, but what's been the clearest shot to the Final Four that Tennessee had? Because I have a thought or two on that, and I'm sure everybody does, but there's opportunities that have been there. I'm not sure this one's the cleanest opportunity coming up, even as good as our team is. It's got challenges for sure.
Oh, no, yeah. You can't really make the case that this one fits that criteria just because you are playing chalk. Like, you're playing the three seed and most likely playing a team that's been in contention for being the number one overall seed when you talk about Purdue. Like, this bracket has not opened up for you by any means.
Yep.
That doesn't mean that can't be the year that you break through. But, yeah, we could talk about that next. It's the Morning Show on Fan Run Radio.
The first.
Nick in the Fan Run Discord points out that the sports line model has us losing tomorrow by one. What the hell does CBS Sports know?
They're
if
the
it
one,
ain't Jordan DeZanny, I don't want it.
They're the ones that seeded us as 12 in the reseed, too.
Yeah, I mean, every computer model is going to have this as basically a coin flip. Whether or not Tennessee's on the right side or wrong side of the coin flip doesn't really matter. It's basically a game where the models are going to have it within a point or a point and a half.
Eli's model had Tennessee, didn't he?
Yeah, about 1.5.
I trust Eli.
I mean, Vegas has this by 2.5. I mean, like, it's a very, you know, it's a very tight game.
Yeah.
Creighton's a good team. I do like our matchup. And when you tell me they play, you know, drop coverage, and when I've seen them get kind of punked physically, like, unless Creighton shoots 45 or 50% from three, I think Tennessee's going to win. Can Creighton shoot 45 or 50% from three? Sure. But they're a good team, which is why, you know, I don't think this is necessarily what you call the best setup, but I do think in terms of Sweet 16 matchups, I do think Tennessee is maybe best equipped to handle their Sweet 16 opponent. Bob, you've went through the history of all the Sweet 16 chances Tennessee's had. What's your verdict on Tennessee's most squandered opportunity?
Well, I think there's four that emerge, right? And if you go in chronological order, the four that the years that I'm thinking of are 2000, which again, some people may not remember, and I want to elaborate on 2000 in a second because I remember it really well. 2007, 2010, obviously, because they were in the Elite Eight. And then I think 2019 as well. That team was, we felt really special. And we can dissect any of these. I want to lobby my vote for 2000.
I mean, to me, I think this is the obvious answer.
Yeah. Yeah. I just think that you went through the first round, beat Louisiana Lafayette, took care of UConn, which UConn was kind of the peak of their success at that moment. They, you know.
Well, they were defending national champions.
Right.
And they came in, I think, only as a five seed, though. So, like, they weren't as powerful, but they were at least, you know, defending champions and had tournament success. And,
right.
Of course, Jim Calhoun had them rolling.
Yeah, Tennessee took care of them, too. I mean, it wasn't really that close of a game. So that's when everybody started feeling good because your next opponent in the Sweet 16 was North Carolina, but it was an eight-seed North Carolina team under Bill Gethridge, who wasn't entirely that successful after succeeding Dean Smith. But that game, if you had won that game, you were going to be playing Tulsa under Bill Self for a chance to go to the Final Four. And it was not, you know, Tulsa had a great record, but that was an absolutely beatable team to get to the Final Four.
Well, no, yeah, like your seeding could have been, you know, the, 13 seed, the 5 seed, the 8 seed, the 7 seed, and then even Florida, who was in the Final Four and went to the national championship to lose to Michigan State.
Yeah.
They were just a 5 seed. So, like, Tennessee was the higher seed, or I guess lower seed, the better seed, could have been the better seed in their game all the way to the national championship where they would have lost to Michigan State. Like, that to me is a big squandered opportunity. And that's one that also, Bob, that Tennessee just choked away. They had a lead throughout most of that game, and I went back and watched that game on YouTube last year and was just kind of really frustrated. Like, I want to say Tennessee was up like 7 with like 5 or 6 minutes left and then just like didn't score the rest of the game.
There's a story that goes, there was it wasn't necessarily on the live game, but there was a microphone that picked up Gethridge in a North Carolina timeout, and it was probably around that 5-6 minute mark, saying, just keep doing what we do, they will fold. He goes, that's what we know about them. I mean, that's literally what he said. And it's exactly what happened, man. It was tough to watch. It was there. That was right there for that team. Go to another Elite Eight, very likely could get to the Final Four.
Is that what got Bill Self the Kansas job the next year? Was that that lineup?
No, it got Bill Self the Illinois job.
Okay, yeah, because Roy Williams didn't leave until like 2003 or so.
Yeah. He did
2004.
He did a handful of seasons at Illinois and then moved from there.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the trivia question is who took over for Bill Self? It was Buzz Peterson at Tulsa for one season. Got him to the NIT final, and then he parlayed that into the Tennessee job.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, God. I would have liked to have heard the meltdown in 2000, to been on the radio, or at least been old enough to just have enough angry friends to hear the phone calls and how mad people would have been at that meltdown. Because, yeah, you were up 62-55 with 6 minutes left. And, you know, you just pretty much didn't score again, or at least a field goal again. I think you had 2 free throws to go up. You're up 64-57 with 4:30 left. And then you, you know,
score 5 points from there on.
Yeah, and I think, like, you hit a 3 at the buzzer or something to, like, of garbage time. Like,
yeah,
you just completely fell apart and blew that game that could have gotten you to the Elite Eight. While waiting on a 7-seed Tulsa team.
Yeah. Yeah, it was tough. I mean, that's more than any of these teams, these other teams that we talk about, I remember as a fan, that was the season where I was like, man, this is it, man. They're going to a Final Four. After beating Connecticut and looking at who you had next in line, it just was so incredibly set up in a good way for Tennessee, and they missed it. They missed it.
Sam, don't ever waste your time going back to watch this game either. It's so gross. It's such gross basketball.
So we agree, Sam, you're just going to have to fall in line because you weren't even on the planet at that point. But we think that's the biggest missed opportunity, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, to me, just when you look at the entire bracket, if you're talking about just getting to the Final Four, then, like, I think you can go back to 18 or 19, or especially 18, like against Loyola. That set up really, really well, too, when you look at that, especially, like, knowing – being equipped with the knowledge that Kentucky blew that game. You could say that, like, the year that you lost to Michigan, you would have played the 8-seed Kentucky team, right? That was the 8-seed Kentucky team that went to the national championship, right?
Yes.
That had beaten Wichita State. I believe that's how it worked out.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, you know, both of those were pretty set up, too. I told you it was, what, 64-57 with 4.5 minutes left?
Yeah.
So they went on a 13-0 run. It's 70-64 with 22 seconds left. Can you imagine that meltdown you'd have been having?
And again, what was so embarrassing was to hear, again, the opponent telling his team, man, we're good. We got this. These guys don't know how to hold a lead.
These guys suck. They'll fold.
We're Carolina. They're Tennessee. That was kind of the whole vibe.
Well, you know, That was going to be my one pushback, and I know they were coached by some guy named, what'd you say, Bill Guthridge, which
yeah.
He doesn't really get his just due in the North Carolina line of prestige. No one ever really talks about the Bill Guthridge years, at least that I know of.
No.
But, like, it did come down to, hey, it's Tennessee playing North Carolina. So, like, there would be that doubt of, like, hey, you are playing a blue blood, a program that's going to get it done, and, yeah, they're, like, 20-14 in the ACC that year or whatever it was. Like, they weren't a good team, but it was still North Carolina. Whereas, like I said, when you look at the way 2018 opened up and you're playing, like, Loyola, and then you would have gotten, like, Nevada and Kansas State, I think that opened up maybe just as good, if not better. I don't really know what Bill Self had at Tulsa, but knowing that, like, he became a legendary coach, you at least give him a little bit of a rub. Like, yeah, Musselman's been good at Arkansas, and, like, the Martin twins were solid, you know, really good college players and solid in the NBA, but, like, I would have taken my chances against him in Nevada in that Sweet 16. I think that opened up just as good, just as open.
I don't think you mentioned the 2014 team, and I think I was just so – I mean, I was brokenhearted when they lost to Michigan, but I was so shocked that they were even that far along. I didn't have a whole lot of faith in them, even if they got to an Elite Eight.
Tennessee in 2014 was actually just on the right side finally of, like, the way the bracket was seeded.
Yep.
Like, yeah, you had to play in the first four, but once you survived Iowa, you looked and it was like UMass and then – who was it that beat Duke that year? Mercer. Like, yeah, you got to beat UMass and Mercer to get to the Sweet 16.
Yeah.
But, like, that team had talent, and, like, you had just been waiting all year for it to actually click, and then it finally started clicking. Like, I think that team was good enough to make a Final Four, too, and you look at had they beaten Michigan. I would have taken my chances against that Kentucky team for sure.
Yeah.
Those damn Harrison twins.
The Ohio State game that we mentioned to Sam earlier – Tennessee was up 17 at half.
You're making me sad, Bob.
That's what. Well, I'm just saying this is an opportunity. There's been missed opportunities. This one's hard, man. And imagine if we get to the Elite Eight or even a Final Four. Just imagine that becomes historic accomplishment. That's the way I'm looking at it. It's not whatever happens at this point. I'm of the belief that. We can't come back next week if we're not advancing to the Final Four being like, God, this season, what a failure. I mean, it's like we're playing great teams at this point. We just got to ride with them.
See, I don't know if I can feel like it wasn't a failure if we come back next week or not in the Final Four, because all you're telling me is that we do fail. That's all you're telling me. It wouldn't be unique failure. It wouldn't be unique failure, but, like, we need a damn baptism is what we need. We need to wash away these tournament letdowns and these big moments. That's what I'm hearing. Like,
I totally agree. What I'm saying is this has been a history of missed opportunities against teams where it's like you look at the matchups and it's like, what the hell, man? How did that happen? Even against Ohio State, you dominated the first half. How do you lose that game? How do you end up losing?
Because they had Greg Oden.
Yeah.
That's how. They had Greg Oden and you didn't.
Remember, Ryan Childress went nuts in that game in the first half.
I don't remember because I was on a cruise and they wouldn't show the game. Like that was before they put everything just like on all these channels. So like the cruise line's local was not Tennessee, Ohio State. I didn't get to see it until the second half, surrounded by Ohio State fans. So I didn't get to see Ryan Childress going crazy. I just kept seeing the score go up and up and up. Because you couldn't even really be on the internet. You didn't really know what was happening. You just kept seeing up and up and up. You're like, come on, let's go. And then, just in time to see us, like, completely choke the lead away.
Yeah, a listener pops in on the Ohio State game. If we had won, Tennessee would have played Memphis in the Elite Eight. Tennessee had blown them out earlier in the season. And then you would play Florida in the Final Four. You would beat them twice that season.
That would be a sick matchup, too. You just get the in-state rivalry for the Elite Eight.
Yeah.
Go on to play Florida.
You'd matched up well against Florida. You know, that was Florida back-to-back national champion team. And, like, I don't know if you'd have gotten them actually in the tournament. But, like, they were obviously really good. But you matched up well with them. You were kind of their kryptonite a little bit. And that was a wasted opportunity. Tennessee's wasted a lot of opportunities. Like, I do think it'd be fitting if they were able to actually kind of advance and break through by beating Chalk, by beating you know, the toughest matchup in every round. The 7, the 3, the 1. That would be kind of fitting because you have wasted opportunities against teams that were, you know, lucky to be there in that round or lucky to advance. With all that being said, I do think this team is just as equipped as any to advance, even considering the matchup.
Yeah. Just think how great it's going to feel if they do. I mean, it's because you're – again, it's a gauntlet, man. It's kind of like the Maui Invitational all over again, but this time we need to win them.
You have made 9 Sweet 16s prior to this year. You've had 9 Sweet 16 games. It feels like a statistical anomaly that you've only won one of them. To be 1-8 in 9 of those, if you believe in progression to the mean, you need to win like 2 or 3 of these in a row. You need to roll off a couple Elite Eights in a row. 1-8?
I agree.
I understand that Tennessee wasn't, you know, necessarily favored in all those 9 games, but they were favored in enough of them. That was one of the best nights of my sports fandom, though, watching my boy J.P. Prince lock down Evan Turner.
Wasn't he the one that got the block?
Yeah, that's what I said. My boy locked him down, clamped him up.
God, that was great.
Clamped him up, my boy. A damn 13-0 run, Sam. You're up 64-57 with 4.5 minutes left, and you get blown out, basically. Watching these highlights, if you tell me basketball used to be better, I don't agree. I don't agree. I've seen enough highlights of the 90s NBA and the 2000s NBA and these old college basketball games. Basketball did not used to be better. No thanks. Hour 2 in the books. We'll kick off hour 3. We'll talk a little Joe Milton Pro Day. We'll keep talking hoops. Stick with us.
We are closing in on some very, very, very meaningful basketball games this weekend. It starts tonight with Sweet 16 play, but more notably for the Tennessee Vols, tomorrow night's not that far away. We're getting closer, and wanting to get a little bit of a look ahead, as we tend to do with our weekly guest, and we are so thankful that we have him making time for us at a busy, busy time of season for the Vols. Assistant Coach Greg Polinski joining us. Coach, how are you, my friend?
I'm great, fellas. How is everybody back in Knoxville?
Excited and ready to go. My flight in the morning, Coach, is at 5:30. I'll be headed to Detroit bright and early in the morning.
Okay. Get you a big Starbucks.
Yeah.
Gonna be a long night. Gonna be a long night. You're right about that. Gonna be a very long day.
It is a long one.
Yeah. So thinking back, I'm sequencing this a little bit. You think back to the wars from last weekend, the first and second round, now looking ahead to Creighton. What I was so struck by was obviously the team struggled in terms of just making baskets. It was a hard, hard game. But what I saw that was really different, I think we all saw it, is, man, just so much perseverance, so much resilience. The defense buckled down, and here we are, you know, Sweet 16 still. From your perspective, is that how you guys are taking it? It's like, hey, got that behind us. Can't get much harder than that, and we still have some super hard games ahead of us. Is that how you prep for Creighton at this point? Obviously a really, really talented team.
Yeah, very talented team. You know, to answer and then move into Creighton, yeah, I mean, it's pretty evident. Extremely proud of our team. A lesser group of guys might have given into that. Certainly wasn't the prettiest game aesthetically. In terms of making baskets, I think we were 3 of 25 from 3 and shot in the low 30s. I think you have to go back to 1997 to find a team that won doing that in the NCAA tournament on that volume of shots. So I think, you know, there's a lot to be proud of with the guys, because you can play poorly and shoot well, and most people will tell you, man, you guys played great. Well, you might not have, really. You might not have played real well, maybe not executed. But when you shoot the ball, it takes care of a lot of ills. And we didn't. That's obvious, right? That's the most obvious statement I can make. So to be able to, as you said, persevere, get through that game, I don't think we'll be able to do it again. I think that, you know, Creighton is a in our league, play somewhat like Alabama differently. They utilize the pass a lot more than the dribble, but really well coached. Run a lot of great actions, play very fast. We'll take the early three. So if we're not on our A game both ways, that'll be very difficult to beat. You know, they present a lot of challenges, very good, old, experienced, skilled. They got three fundamental things they can do that kind of sounds silly, but you would say, what would you want in any basketball player? They can pass, dribble, and shoot.
Just one last thing about the Texas game. I mean, it stood out, you know, just the perseverance, like you said. As a coach and as a coaching staff, is that type of win something to be more proud of? You know, checking the mental fortitude of your team? Or would you just prefer, like, hey, don't make me sweat, let's just execute and knock some shots down? Because I do think you can come out of that game with a lot of confidence of making crunch time plays, you know, especially at the free throw line.
Yeah, no, I mean, we made some plays. There were some big shots. I mean, far and few between, but, you know, Josiah's three in the corner I thought was huge with 7 minutes to go, and bumped us up a little bit. And Lord knows on that night we needed, you know, any margin we could find. But I think we come out of that with a positive spin. That's, you know, it's so hard to win a game when you shoot that poorly. We got looks. We felt good about it. We're going to take those same looks. We have, you know, Coach says it all the time. I know it may not seem like, but we feel like we have a good shooting team. Weapons, places we can go to score the ball. So, you know, to get that game behind us and hopefully not have a repeat, we'll take the defensive effort. We need to make some shots.
As we're looking ahead to Creighton tomorrow night, is there a team that Tennessee has played so far this year that reminds you the most of Creighton? And, you know, the matchup kind of similar that we could look at?
Yeah, I would say yes and no. So what I'd said just a little earlier was, in terms of tempo, offensive efficiency. They're sixth in the country in three-pointers made per game. Fourth in offensive efficiency. I would say Alabama because they play with speed, but they use the pass. You know, they get the ball to the court really quickly. They know exactly what they want to do with it. They do a variety of things out of transition that are difficult to guard. Really, like I said, an extremely well-coached team. I mean, it's no surprise. Coach McDermott's been doing this for years. They've been to Sweet 16s, Elite Eights. So, again, we'll have to be on our A game in order to have an opportunity to win this game tonight. Tomorrow night.
It seemed like Oregon had a lot of success getting Kalkbrenner involved in screen action, and, you know, really kind of picking on him a little bit in the pick and roll and trying to draw him, of course, away from the basket. You know, he's tall. You don't want him down there next to the rim. Is that something that you guys have looked at and thought that maybe you could take away from the Oregon game? Because, you know, I've complimented Tennessee's pick and roll action and kind of playing more of the NBA style this year. I think Zakai and Dalton have both been really successful with that. And I think Jonas showed some real flashes, even against Texas, of being able to create kind of in that role man position and being able to, you know, find the pass to Josiah for the reverse layup and find shooters in the corners. Do you take a lot away from that Oregon game? Are you taking your own success from the season? Is, you know, the pick and roll and getting Kalkbrenner away from the rim, is that kind of the simplest way to attack that defense?
Well, I think what you said, like, we're going to do what we do, but obviously when you look at as much as we have on Creighton, and I'm sure Creighton has done the same with us, right, in terms of preparation, you try to implement what you do well and also take a look at your opponent, see where there may be, I don't know if holes is the answer, but where maybe you can gain an advantage. They're a really good defensive team as well. They've ranked in the top 25 all year. So they're just solid as a rock. But we looked at everything that we thought that is good with our personnel, and we're going to try to maximize that during this game. And as the game goes along, obviously you've got to find a flow and a rhythm to see what you want to do based upon what they're doing defensively.
You know, John mentioned Kalkbrenner, and this is just one in a long line of elite bigs that Tennessee has faced this year. You know, it started back in Maui with Edie and Hunter Dickinson, then in conference with Tolu Smith, Armando Bacot back in non-conference, and then Jani Broom. I mean, it just goes on and on. I don't remember a season in recent memory where we've seen so many talented bigs. And Kalkbrenner's a different beast altogether, in that he's, you know, pretty good rim protector. Saw him shoot a really clutch three against Oregon, so he's comfortable doing that. I mean, this has been, talk about kind of a heavy-duty tutorial this season for Jonas. He's and he's responded pretty well, I would say. So that matchup, if it's Kalkbrenner going out to the perimeter, I mean, does that, from a defensive standpoint, does that set Tennessee back, or do you guys just feel there's, you know, you guys are probably planning adjustments for that? I mean, I don't want to have you try to expose your game plans to us, but I would be interested to hear that, because that's a different kind of look. I guess we saw some of it with Dickinson too.
Yeah, so kind of a combination of what you just said, of, you know, not quite as big as Zach Edey, but he's big. That is a big man. Very fluid, very good scorer, obviously in the paint, gives him a presence. And it seems now he's expanded his game out to the three-point line. They surround him with four other shooters, so they make it very difficult to, you know, help off of him. A great deal. We're going to have to mix some things up and, again, find the flow of this game and, you know, be ready to make some adjustments, but also, you know, not lose our identity to what we do and who we are.
Talking with Tennessee men's assistant basketball coach Greg Polinsky. Coach, what has been the most rewarding part so far of this run to the Sweet 16?
For me, it's always what joy and extending the great careers of Santi, Josiah, Zakai. You know, obviously those guys are juniors, but that probably, to see the joy those guys have after a win, knowing that, hey, any game could be their last game. I think that is where I get great satisfaction, as well as our fans waiting for us at the hotel. You know, we have unbelievable fans that support this group, make them feel appreciated. Can't say enough about that at games. You know, I just, maybe, again, I was laughing. As they get older, maybe a little corny, you know. But it's special being at Tennessee. And I think each player knows that, especially the older guys. So that would be my answer to it, you know. I love seeing this ride continue for these guys.
It does hit me in the feels a little bit, seeing the pictures that come out of you and Josiah embracing and seeing the love there. With all that being said, Coach, I know we talk about one game at a time and every game's the same and, you know, you're just trying to be focused. But, like, when you talk about the release and the excitement of winning these games, like, the pressure goes up and these games, do they feel different this week than they did last week?
Yes and no. To say that it's not, like, more exciting or that there's not, you use the word pressure, and we talk about this, you know, and this isn't my statement. I saw this somewhere. You guys might even know that the term, you know, pressure is a privilege.
Right.
You know, it really is. And we may have talked about that even on the show. It's, so what is pressure? You know, I mean, I had a coach one time that told me he was a fighter pilot in Korea, and we missed a bunch of one-on-ones. When I was playing, that's how old this comment is. Somebody said something about, you know, well, maybe felt a little pressure, and he said, hey, pressure is when you're 30,000 feet up and someone's shooting at you. Free throws? So, perspective, right? But at the same time, this is a goal. You know, we'd love to continue on and win the big trophy. So, obviously, you got to take it step by step here, and we've got a tremendous challenge in Creighton. But yeah, I think at each juncture, each step, you feel a little more. I'll use the term juice. That God, we're taking another step, and you know, the excitement builds a little bit, and pressure. I wouldn't say that. You know, I think. It's the joy of, you know, playing basketball and this opportunity to do something special. That's where I think we, you know, I'd leave it with our group.
You know, I've never been 35,000 feet in the air getting shot at, but
me either.
I was there with my hands in my head, Coach, when I watched the ball get inbounded to Adu as he had to step up and shoot the 1-1, and you know, he knocked him down 3 of 4 in the last couple minutes and really helped Tennessee keep that lead, but. What's the process like there in the late game inbounding? Because to me, you know, an observer from the outside, I'm like, man, that seems like a bad decision getting the ball to your big man who's, you know, not the best free throw shooter. But you also, you obviously don't want a 5-second call and you want to get the ball in. So, like, what's the process there? Is it like, hey, here's option one. If it's not open, get it to anybody? Or how does that work?
Yeah, I mean, we have an out-of-bounds play we ran, and they did a great job of taking away our best free throw shooters. Texas played great defensively. You know, Coach Terry worked with Coach Barnes, you know, for 9 years or so. So he probably had some idea. They're scouting who we got, our personnel. There was some talk of maybe just putting in 5 guards, you know, our best free throw shooters. But at the end of the day, if for some reason you – throw the ball away. It gets deflected. They go on offense. It's a good feeling having Jonas in there around the rim. So it was a tough decision, but at the end of the day it worked out. And I would also tell you we have confidence in Jonas. I know the numbers. You could say, look, you got to be kidding. Your season, you know, what he shot in conference play or what he, but Jonas is a good shooter. And, look, he stepped up and made two clutch free throws.
Sticking with the bigs, I have one more question for you, Coach, and that's regarding Tobe Awaka. And we were watching the game last weekend, and I'm thinking ahead again. This kind of ties into my question about working against a lot of elite bigs over the course of the season and what could lie ahead this coming weekend. And it centers around kind of the elephant in the room with him, and that's fouls, because he played with so much energy against Texas and was such a force offensively to start that game. But then, you know, a couple of the fouls that he drew had to be frustrating for him and for the team and the coaches. Got to believe that's something you guys continue to talk about with him, but it, you know, it just seems sometimes in these tournament games, you just don't know what kind of whistle there's going to be with the refs too.
Yeah.
For someone like him, that's such a touchy topic. You don't want to tamp down his energy level too much, but how do you counter that?
Well, we talk about smart fouls, and that sounds kind of a contradiction, right, of terms, but good fouls, let's say, for Tobe are going after an offensive rebound. Hey, if you dive on the floor and you're both, you know, grappling for the ball and there's a foul, you do a great block out, but the referee thinks it's too physical. What we got to avoid is the ones in the post where he wraps guys up, you know, like puts his hands, and we work on it, you know, but in the moment, sometimes guys are physical. Tobe responds with physicality, just being a little more basketball IQ aware of what teams might be trying to bait you into, those type of things. But just getting him to understand what is a good foul, because they're meaning, look, these are effort fouls. We'll accept this, but let's not get these knick-knack or these ones that you can absolutely avoid.
I feel like we've been doing this long enough. We're kind of friends now, Coach, so I'm asking you as a friend, not necessarily as an insider and putting you out there, but, like, do you have any indication after we win on Friday if we'll be the early game or late game on Sunday? Because my flight's at, like, 9 o'clock out of Detroit on Sunday night, and I need to know if I need to have a contingency plan.
I want to leave that as a giant question mark for you. That means that we have something to really talk about in Detroit, and, you know, as obviously our entire focus is on Creighton. So I don't think we care what time we play if we can get to Sunday, but I do think those are more day games, but I could be wrong. I haven't even looked at it, guys.
Well, yeah, I know it's either 2 o'clock, it's either 2:20 or 5:50, but that's a big difference when my flight's at 9, but it's fine. I won't bog you down with that worry.
Coach,
I'll handle it. No big deal.
Coach, I appreciate you caring about the game and not John's travel plans.
Just, you know, we're friends now. It's my boy G-Rag.
Hey,
you know, I just say, you know.
Yeah, you got it, fellas. Exactly.
All right,
feel the same way, fellas.
On the way out, the one biggest key to victory for Tennessee against Creighton on Friday is what?
I'd say I'll give you two things. We've got to get back in transition, and obviously Creighton knows that. Whether we can do it or not is to be seen, and we got to make some shots. I mean, it sounds simple, but that's it. I mean, there's other things you got to do with Creighton, but if you don't take care of getting back on defense, you won't be able to play half-court defense against them. They're that good. And then we got to put the ball in the basket.
It is that simple sometimes. We're at the point now where everyone's good. It just comes down to who can make shots and who can execute. Coach, I hope that is us this weekend. Really appreciate your time every week. It's been nice growing with you and going on this journey. Hopefully we're celebrating next week, getting ready for the Final Four. Have a great trip to Detroit. Best of luck, and I'll see you.
Thank you, guys.
Good luck, Coach.
All right, appreciate you.
Yeah, man.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
You think he considers me a friend now that I've put it out there?
Go down to the sidelines if you can.
Z-Red!
Yeah. Hey, man.
I made it!
Like right in the middle of the
I'm
game.
I'm here!
Like right in the middle of the game. Yeah.
You need a timeout?
Yeah, during a timeout.
Pick and roll! Remember what we talked about! Pick and roll!
Carpenter, he's slipping on that.
Yeah. He's going under! Shoot it! Tell Dalton to shoot!
Or even do like, hey, coach, I found out. Actually, the game's on Sunday.
220 if we win! I'll just stick with my usual rebound. That's what I love yelling during the games.
Oh my god!
I'm like the older women in Neyland Stadium that just yells, "Tackle, get him,
get him."
That's me during basketball. Rebound, get the ball, box out. G-Reg.
Oh, that's funny.
Last call on the other side. As we get through the rest of this Thursday show, the madness getting ready to pick back up. It's the Morning Show on Fan Run Radio.